And so we developed this message card, which allowed merchants to tailor it to their audience. And that's when things changed. Because if you're just selling a random ring, who do you target? Like, do you just target women? And millions of rings out there. But when you add it with a tailored message, you say when they cry, they buy.
Welcome to the High Voltage Business Builders Podcast, a show where we interview high voltage entrepreneurs growing and scaling through e-commerce, real estate, and other wealth without Wall Street ventures, showing you the path to making your first or next million.
So you were explaining just a second ago, let's keep going on the topic. Eric, welcome to the call. Thanks for joining me.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining.
Yeah, we were in flow. We were in flow and I thought I better stop and hit record. But tell me some of the things you were just talking about with Shinon that you guys are working on right now.
So we're launching an FBA service. So we'll send a bulk order to Amazon on your behalf. We're really excited about that. We're really excited about cash on delivery. So as Shinon, you know, I like to say we eat our own dog food. So like anything we give to the merchants through our app, any of the services we create, like we're sellers too. So we'll actually sell everything ourselves first. And so Amazon, we're starting to get some decent traction there. I think it's good passive income. We have one gentleman who we hired in-house who was actually selling our product on Amazon. And we just said, hey, can you teach other people to do this? So we'll have an Amazon course for Shinon soon. And then, yeah, cash on delivery is huge in Europe. So in like Portugal, Poland, Hungary, you know, every country is sort of different in how they do their payment processing. Germany loves Klarna, for example, but nobody in print on demand is doing cash on delivery right now. And we see it as a huge opportunity. There's CPAs of like $5 in Poland, for example. So we're going to launch our cash on delivery service soon via the Shinon app.
Now, for people who are not familiar with Shinon, can you give us a quick rundown of what it actually is and what you're doing?
Yeah, Shinon is it's a print-on-demand service and Shopify app. We're number 3 in the App Store, Shopify's App Store for the word print-on-demand. We're a lot like Printful and Gelato that are billion-dollar companies, except we do all the alternate products they don't do. So we really focus on gifts, especially family gifts. So that's jewelry, wallets, watches, canvases and wall art and stuff like that. But yeah, personalized and small is usually our forte.
Excellent. So cash on demand in Europe. I assume you got a facility out there that's helping support that?
Cash on delivery. Yes, we have two facilities. We have our Tampa, Florida factory, and then we have basically a half size version of it in Amsterdam. And so we're learning a lot about selling in Europe. It's a little bit of a bitch, but that's why it can be fruitful once you knock through those barriers to entry.
Now, what kind of product particularly are you seeing the most of right now in your print on demand? What is it? Is it still mugs? Is it t-shirts? Like, what are you kind of seeing in terms of trending?
Well, yeah. So we've almost sold definitely over $100 million of our core product, which is essentially, it's a Hallmark card that you customize as the merchant. So you tailor that card to your audience, and then the card goes inside the jewelry box, and there's a necklace that is over both. Yeah, it's just a jewelry box with a Hallmark card inside, and that crushes. You know, all of our hard SKUs, the jewelry items that you see in our catalog, like these are all top selling products on Amazon. But we bought them ourselves. We tried reselling them on Amazon and through DTC. We just couldn't make it work. And so we developed this message card, which allowed merchants to tailor it to their audience. And that's when things changed. Because if you're just selling a random ring, who do you target? Like, do you just target women? And millions of rings out there. But when you add it with a tailored message, we say when they cry, they buy. So yeah, if you can, exactly. You can get them to cry.
Yeah. How did you get into this business, Eric? Did you fall into it, or were you a seller yourself that ended up starting Shinon in terms of growth? Like, what was the need and where did you start?
I've actually never been a seller. I've never been a seller at all. I've always wanted to help people make money. So I set up a jewelry supply chain for custommade.com. If you go to custommade.com right now, you can see what it is, but basically you send in your drawing or your image for a piece of custom jewelry that you want. And then they'll go through the process of making a 3D model. And then you hit buy and they'll actually manufacture it and ship it to you. So I was setting up this supply chain right around the same time Teespring started exploding. I know you're familiar with Neil. And so, yeah, it's all these Facebook advertisers, Shopify merchants were just crushing it with t-shirts print on demand. And I was kind of like, well, what if we did like jewelry on demand? Would that work? And didn't know, just had like kind of a deep belief that it would.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of burned the ships and went all out. And yeah, 6 years later, we're doing about $80 million a year in print on demand jewelry sales.
Yeah, that's okay. We can probably live off of that, I guess.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It'll do.
A lot of costs, but
yeah, well, cost, teams, and structure. How many team do you have working with you? Staff under you guys now?
It depends. Like, so on a slow, during the summer when the fulfillment team is slow, we might have 60, 70 people. But when it really gets going, you know, we'll have over 100 employees. Sometimes we'll have over 150 if you include all the fulfillment folks. But yeah, the core marketing and engineering team is probably about 50 people.
Yeah. So someone just wanted to get started can use your, you know, print on demand for a zero inventory startup. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, exactly. And even Shopify now, like if you sign up for a new account, they're going to ask you, are you interested in drop shipping or print on demand? It's literally a yes, no question. And if you say yes, they just bring you to the app store. So Shopify likes print on demand because it's like the quickest way for somebody to get their first sale and stick with the platform instead of like having to buy your own inventory.
Yeah. So where are you taking things? Where do you see, I mean, we're coming to the end of, as we're getting this out to market, it'll be roughly the end of 2022. Where do you kind of see things going? What's your continued vision and goal?
I think print on demand is still kind of in its infancy, even though it's pretty huge here and it's pretty big in Europe. There's very little infrastructure in South America. So we're looking at going into Brazil, which is a huge market. They use social media even more than we do. And the CPAs are low, like $2, $3 CPAs. Of course, like the retail is about, you know, half price, but it still comes out to better profit margins than here. So yeah, we're looking into Brazil, South America, Australia, and just
do they also subscribe more to that COD, like the European side? Is that part of the opportunity too?
And no, so they don't do cash on delivery. They will do this. Yeah, it's great. Global commerce is fun. But yeah, like cash on delivery, there's Klarna in Germany. And what Brazil does is basically everything is sort of like payment plan. Even like if you buy a flight in Brazil, they're going to give you an option to split that into 4 or 8 payments. So even e-commerce there is a lot of the same way because very few people actually have access to credit cards there. And yeah, credit really changes in industry and e-commerce in different countries. The more access to credit they have, the more they'll buy online because it's basically a whole trust system. So as credit emerges in South America, I feel that e-commerce is just going to explode there.
Yeah, we're still very much what feels like a lot of early adoptions for quite a few of the markets in the world, aren't we? I mean, it seems like in some areas we're mature to the point of almost feeling saturated, maybe in the United States or other places, but in a global economy, we're still kind of wide open in early adoption to the internet, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. Like I only have a little bit of experience with South America. My fiance is Brazilian, but like, sure, I'm looking at like Africa. I know nothing about that market, but people that do, I'm sure they're going to be able to crush it and absolutely crush it if they're not already. But yeah, it's just like it's barriers to entry. It's learning. It takes time. There's going to be very little profit for the first 2 years of you going to a new market like that. So yeah, it's a total commitment.
Yeah. Well, and it's part of the visionary role of being a CEO, isn't it? Is to kind of help lead forward and understand where the opportunities and risks are and strengths and weaknesses of your business, aren't there?
Yeah, I think it's just learning, really. I think us, you, anyone in e-commerce who's doing well, we're professional learners in real time because it's everything changes so quickly, you know?
Yeah, it can change by the week, by the day sometimes. We were talking and lamenting a little before we started recording about how Big Check has kind of made some of that requirement for agility and versatility in this e-commerce model as we're playing with certain platforms that people like to say you partner with these platforms and they have your best interest, but in actuality, you can run into some major challenges if they don't like what you're doing and simply just end it for you if they determine they don't like the game you're playing, as we just discovered. One of our stores that got completely killed by Shopify for reasons I don't really understand just yet, even though we're all in full compliance, that's the game. So now we move to a new platform that we can control more of. So agility is the name of the game, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. How is WooCommerce going for you? What do you think of it so far?
Well, I mean, I would acknowledge WooCommerce and Shopify in my brain down to those who like Android and iPhone. Mm-hmm. There are purpose and utilitarian aspects of each one that some people like and others do not like for various reasons, whether it's interface or features or buttons or how easy it is to use or how much you can configure. WooCommerce is one of those more, I would analogize, on the tinkering Android system configuration side, where you've got to do a little bit more technical work to kind of get it where you want, but it's pretty robust. There's a lot of features, there's a lot of plugins, there's a lot of adaptability to it, which can be one of the challenges too, because there's so many things you can configure. But once it's set up and running, it's very stable. It's you know, running millions of websites and e-commerce around the world long before Shopify was around. But Shopify has that more kind of iPhone feeling where I just push a few buttons mm-hmm. and it has a little more slick interface and it kind of feels like I can get moving a little quicker and a little bit more intuitive in some ways. So that's how I would acknowledge it. Does that make sense to you? Or do you echo that?
It's more open source like Android.
Yeah, it is. And it gives you that ability to change and be more flexible, which means you can also break things or get confused as to which checkbox you didn't check correctly and why is it not working, which is a lot of the reasons why eventually I moved off PC and went to Mac fully in my own personal life in the past. Was tinkering with Windows just got really annoying and dealing with that nonsense and moving to a Mac and an iPhone. I just don't deal with any of that technical stuff anymore. Yeah. So going from Shopify to WooCommerce or dealing with those two kind of feels a little bit like that to me at times. From a technical perspective on that side. But as we play in the Amazon game, we play a very different technical role within their system of control and buttons that you have to push, which can also break things if you don't do it right.
Where do you think Amazon's heading? I know, like, I heard a VP speak about 2 years ago, and they basically said they're making this big push into brands. So not just like their own private label, but they want basically storefronts within Amazon, and they really want you to create your brand within Amazon. Is that still the case?
Yeah. So for 5 years, we've been talking about brands and management of brands and branding really being the only way to create longevity in an e-commerce business, but also within Amazon's ecosystem, which is in the antithesis of the dropshipping print-on-demand world for Amazon, which typically sees people doing more individual, less, you know, LLC formations, not really being able to or knowing how to get brand registered or even going as far as trademarks with their brands to create their IP. So we've pushed as many people as would listen towards brand IP, trademark registration, etc., because Amazon likes it. We know it because they give us brand registration managers, they give us more distribution, they'll unlock different contents and features, even now the ability to direct email the consumer base from within Seller Central. So they're making it easier for brands. They're making it harder for people who are not playing the brand game on Amazon. And in the last 2 years, they've accelerated policies they've had in place. They simply just did not enforce them. And with that acceleration, to answer your question, has come a lot of change in Amazon's marketplace and a lot of screeching from those who are not playing in the brand game on Amazon. Those who might be doing wholesale or retail arbitrage and drop shipping with, you know, wholesale or FBA are finding it much more difficult to play in that game. Amazon simply making it harder for them. Just, you need to be able to prove you're a business with a brand. Do that, and it unlocks the whole system of opportunity for you.
So I went through this huge purge of 500,000
accounts. Last year, they killed $15 billion in sales with accounts that were improperly violating the terms of service. They just had been in a gray area for quite a long time. Some of the largest stores on Amazon were shut down because they were doing black hat initiatives in the background. They just never got caught in compliance, and then they did. So Amazon has made a really concerted effort, which is great for those who play the game of intellectual property and brand management within their business as a, you know, true e-com model to gain that benefit of the structure and access to the traffic and other tools and resources that they will give you and support you on, including moving you to multiple marketplaces by get those marketplaces open within your brand management team. So there's a lot of things you can do there when you do it that way that to open up opportunities. It's just a little more work, Eric. That's what it gets down to. It's a little more startup work than some people are willing to do. It creates a lower barrier, well, higher barrier of entry than previously was there. But still, nonetheless, it creates a huge opportunity for those who take brand opportunity into Amazon. That answer your question? That was a long-winded answer, but
yeah, for sure.
Still significant upside potential. Even those who do print on demand and stuff, if they can get registered and create a brand, you know, will have a much greater organic traffic and upside potential in the platform than just, you know, flipping products for profit without any particular goal or business direction in mind with where they're going. Taking that side hustle hobby business and moving it into a business, right? It's a lot of stuff we talk about here on this particular podcast is to get people to recognize that. Any final thoughts or things you want to share from your perspective on all that?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is, I can't say I'm an expert on that at all, but everyone's kind of wondering, like, what is next? I mean, is Amazon going to continue creating their own private label products? Is that pissing off too many merchants? Does Amazon just not care? And also love to hear your thoughts on Etsy too, and where that's going. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a little bit of a cesspool right now since they opened up dropshippers.
Yeah, Etsy's turned into a little bit of a cesspool, in my opinion. Absolutely. From my own personal experience selling on that platform, it's become a little bit more challenging, saturated a lot faster. Those are sort of established. You kind of get in there. Those are getting new. It's going to take a little bit longer to be established. But on the Amazon side, you know, just to break down some of the narratives that tend to be out there in the world, Amazon very much loves brands and wants to distribute brands and bring more brand traffic and brands to the marketplace. They have shut down, or in the process of shutting down, their own brand. This came out about a month ago that internally they were going to stop. And in the process of doing that, they've acquired iRobot or one of those automatic, I forget which one, I think it was iRoomba. Brands that they have acquired that will be in their management. They basically just got to the point where they recognize they can't manage their own brands on their own platform. And Amazon Basics and some of them were some of the worst valued brands. And so they are now in the process of shutting those brands down.
They shut them down because they were unprofitable, or they just felt dirty competing?
They were all the above. So it borderlined some antitrust rumblings about stealing data and stealing customer data, which was not necessarily ever proven, but there was an internet legend that led it into the limelight virally of a particular person and seller base who had accused and thrown a lawsuit at Amazon for taking their product ideas and taking their seller account data and using it to compete directly with that seller. The internet legend is that Amazon will steal your product, steal your brands. That's why you don't want to go sell on it. In actuality, what happened was, just like any competitor in the marketplace, I could have competed with that person directly because they didn't have a trademark. They had registered their brand on Amazon, but had no trademark defense. They were wide open for anyone to go compete and innovate against them. Amazon just chose to do it. The problem with Amazon doing it is they borderline violated trust at the seller level by knowing that and having that data and then going and using it. It's another thing for me as a seller to go on in the marketplace and said, here's a seller who's open and, oh, by the way, they don't have a trademark and, oh, I can see their manufacturing level and I can figure out where their products are coming from. I can innovate a product and go compete with them in the market and become competition to them. It's very different because I'm using data or estimates or information that I can gather from a competitive advantage. I don't actually have a database I can pull up and look at their stats and their products like Amazon can. So because of that little bit of spin, it turned into that narrative that Amazon steals your products when you become successful. But in actuality, they don't. There is just one line they crossed that made it possible for them, for people to say that they do. But when you compete and you get in there, what you find actually is you reach certain levels of sellability in the platform. They want you to become the more dominant brand. They want you to have a better, because they're selling to the customer. And they want a really good customer experience. We, the sellers, are selling to the algorithm and the system to get it to show more distribution and traffic so that the customer has a good experience and the reviews are good and the product is better than and everybody has a great experience. If you know your place and know your role in that, then you understand the opportunity that it gives you, which is a lot of opportunity, frankly.
Yeah.
If you take it.
I think Amazon needs the creativity of the merchants too. Like they,
100%.
You know, my mind was fast forwarding to 10 years, 20 years from now, like what if everything on Amazon is owned by Amazon and distributed and manufactured by Amazon?
That's not what they want.
Like, what's
absolutely not their direction.
It seems very dystopian, 1984-ish.
Well, they just want the data and they're willing to crowdsource the opportunity to the seller platform, which we don't know the actual financials, but at the board meetings, or if you read into the board notes or meeting minutes of the company, you'll understand that it's either near break even or just not profitable on the .com. So where does Amazon actually make its money is not in the physical products or distribution of the products or the fees and referral fees. It's off the data. It's Amazon Prime. It's Prime Network. It's Amazon Studios now. It's Amazon's web service hosting division. Those are all extremely profitable, being pulled from the data off of .com purchases and customer acquisitions, which is being powered by a third party. So they've created a very unique symbiotic relationship they can't kill. And in fact, they have done a piss poor job of managing it over the last 3 to 5 years. And that with the change in Bezos and the change down at Seller Performance to a new vice president, they're now coming into compliance, which is making it easier and better for sellers to work with Amazon in favor of the ecosystem, which has been kind of fun to watch because previously gray areas you could get caught up in with no out. Like, how do you get out of a gray area? It's ambiguity, right? But some of those things being a little bit more black and white, if you don't know what you're doing, you can screw it up pretty fast. If you do know what you're doing, you can take advantage of it very fast. But there's a lot of experience that comes into even understanding both of those nuances, if that makes any sense. So I see Amazon being a very much a big potential upside as they start to continue to push, you know, more brand, seller brand recognition of the products and the base into the market and giving more upside potential to sellers who are brand driven with tools and options to market to customers and stuff that they previously had restricted.
That's deep. Makes sense, though. It's
opportunity. You stay in it long enough and you've got the capital and the chops to go after it, you'll see the opportunity. If you're playing the short hustle, side hustle game on Amazon with dropshipping and that kind of stuff, be very careful, right? Because they're now on the black and white policy and they're shutting down accounts that don't manage that correctly or don't have a brand or an LLC recognition in place to support their business model. Those things in place, you are showing Amazon, we're actually a business. We're not here to jack your system. They're 38% of the market share right now. And that's still twice as much as Walmart and Target combined.
I thought it was more.
They know where they're going.
I thought it was more. Yeah, I thought it was like...
It was up. They lost 10% of the market share, but everybody else went down too. So they ended up at 38%, but they're still more than Walmart and Target combined.
For what? For online purchases?
For online retail purchases, yeah.
Okay.
E-commerce. Yeah, all the market shifted down. You know, that was just a big right-sizing correction post-COVID. Right. Mm-hmm. But in that way, they are still the largest e-com retailer for .com. Obviously, there's a 65%+ of people who buy that are not on Amazon, but that's still a pretty good size market share, making mm-hmm. about $630 million a day in revenue. So that's all opportunity.
Etsy's headed.
Etsy is going to have to probably backtrack on some of their, you know, moving from handcrafted items into drop shipping and stuff. They're going to have to probably tighten their ecosystem up a little bit, in my opinion, or they're going to end up in the eBay world. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be seen a lot less as handcrafted good items and quality products and more as anything you can drop ship you want in a box from China can show up in Etsy. Yep. Yeah.
They're like tchotchkes for sure.
Yep, it does. It has allowed them to expand their platform, but it's also taken them into a place where I think personally from a management and a seller perspective, it's now like fourth on the marketplace opportunity list, in my opinion, where it was closer to maybe second or third in terms of the products and marketplace. It's dropped quite a bit.
It looked like it was on the verge of exploding maybe a year, 2 years ago, And yet we built our Etsy integration, you know, hoping it would like just totally explode, but no, it's not. They definitely need a refresher.
Yeah, with that saturation looks like that growth and curve to try to keep up with some of the other marketplaces. They've actually saturated some of the product division down to price point quite a bit. You know, price point review saturation problem makes it difficult to get in there and raise prices to profitabilities that actually make sense to market it further. That's been my experience with the products on there, and maybe it's product choice. We have some decent products and our price points are usually $50 to $100.
So you're saying that maybe in their mind, they were saying, let's open this up and get as many SKUs on this platform as possible. But in doing so, they created a race to the bottom where their average order values is going down because there's just so much choice.
It would appear, and this is just my opinion, overarching and being a seller on the platform, that's how it feels. Yeah. They actually have the data, of course, inside their system. But yeah, it seems to be the saturation is driving the price points to situations in which it's not terribly profitable, and running ads within their interface and stuff like that doesn't give you much control over targeting or brand and keyword. So you've got to do some additional outside marketing and traffic work yeah. for Etsy to really to lift it up. And then you've got to obviously deal with those CPM and costs for those other platforms. And then when you get down to the profitability, you know, you don't want to be trading time for money with a couple of dollars in profit per unit. Not unless you're going to make the kind of volume that makes sense. Where I prefer to go is a place where I can hit, you know, $20, $40, $50 in profit per unit while still maintaining the volume of sales and sales velocity. And that's not Etsy. But Walmart did a thing real quick here recently in the last week where they opened up the guidelines quite a bit. They did something very similar. And this is going to be a moment of maybe where Etsy went. We're going to see where Walmart goes here shortly. And had the most signups in one day they've ever had on their platform for sellers.
For Walmart.
Due to removing the restrictions for getting sellers onboarded. They made it a lot easier for you to get on board pretty fast. And because of that, they had a huge spikes in signups. So the question then is, you know, as they relax some of those regulations and let a lot more sellers on the platform, what happens next? Some of these lessons you're watching happen, Amazon already went through years ago. Mm-hmm. And some of these platforms are learning these lessons in their own way. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it a little differently than others.
What do you think Walmart.com's future is?
It's growing market share. A lot of sellers are trying to get their Amazon products and other products onto that because they feel like it's growing and there's a market opportunity. Cost per acquisition seems to be a little bit lower, and CPMs inside of their advertising seem to be quite a bit lower for the friends that are selling in there. I'm not selling in there personally, so I can't speak firsthand about what the seller experience for Walmart is. But I do know a few people who, you know, swear it's kind of like the next big gold rush to get your products in Walmart and take advantage of what they're doing because of their distribution capabilities. I'll reserve rest of my opinion until I eventually get some products on Walmart and sell myself in there and kind of understand a little bit more about what's going on. I just have, it hasn't been a terrible big priority because they're not a big market share. And you know how it goes, Eric. Everybody's trying to chase that next big market, that next sell, that next click, that next lowest CPM, that next place they can expand into. And sometimes staying in the fundamentals is okay while other people go out and explore, right?
Totally.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. Well, man, it's been an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I agree.
I appreciate you coming on. Yeah, we'll go deep, man. That's what we do here. But I'll probably cut it off for now for those who are still listening because we're about 30 minutes in. But any other final word? I'll let you have the last word on things you want to talk about, you know, leave with people as we go out the door here.
No, I mean, I might have to jump on with you again. We might have to do a part two to this because, yeah, it's definitely want to jump into shop more with you and all the channels to look, YouTube Reels and all their shorts and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've been working on some of that too. I've got training some of my people on YouTube, TikTok lead generation, which has been very good, especially with brand referral links on Amazon. That's a great way to build an email list and obviously impact your sales on Amazon positively. TikTok is a hot marketplace right now for that. It's a hot marketplace for any e-com, frankly, if you think about it. List building, email follow-ups, e-commerce, that's where the money's at.
I'll hit you up about it.
All right, my friend. Well, let's keep having the convo. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. See everyone.
If you like this episode, please share it with people you think will enjoy it as well. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for a brand new episode of High Voltage Business Builders.